which includes colored scalars motivated by minimal flavor violation. And we'll ask what are the constraints on such a model, and what are their implications on the Higgs, and in general, how light can they possibly be? So an outline for my talk is I'll start out with why you might be interested in thinking about octet scalars, starting from the perspective of considering a general scalar sector that's consistent with minimal flavor violation and approximate SU2 custodial symmetry. And then we'll go on to thinking about what are the constraints on such a model. So how light can they be? And in order to answer that question, we'll look at doing a fit to electroweak precision data to an extended set of oblique parameters, which are relevant for light states. And we'll generate constraints on octet masses in this way. We'll then see what are the direct production bounds from LEP, what are the implications for the Higgs mass, which we'll try to answer by doing a joint fit. And then finally look at the constraints from Pevitron. So as I mentioned, so the approach that we'd like to follow is to say, let's try to consider a general scalar sector which couples to quarks and muons, is light, and naturally suppresses flavor changing neutral currents and satisfies precision electroweak data measurement. So the approach that we'll take is we'll view our scalars as some low energy effective field theory degrees of freedom for some more fundamental theory at some scale around a few TeV perhaps. And we'll ask that they obey the approximate symmetries of minimal flavor violation in order to naturally suppress flavor change in neutral currents, and also to have approximate custodial symmetry, which, as Helen mentioned before, protects against large radiative corrections to oblique parameters. So let's just start out by remembering what minimal flavor violation is. And it generalizes the approach that Heather mentioned before from Glashow and Weinberg, where you restore the full flavor symmetry of the standard model, where Q are, you know, left-handed doublet, this is right-handed up-type quarks and right-handed down-type, by promoting the standard model eucalypts to spurions, which transform in the following way. And then you construct your theory such that it's invariant under the full flavor group. And what minimal flavor violation gives you is that your new physics of calories will be proportional to the standard model in calories, and therefore will be diagonal in the same basis as the mass matrices for the quarks are. And as a result, flavor change in neutral currents are naturally not present. Your neutral scalar couplings are diagonal when your masses are. And so it gives a simple symmetry reason why your new physics amplitudes will, like the standard model, be suppressed by loop factors, CKM factors, and other such things. So what Manohar and Y showed was that there are only two possible representations of scalars which are consistent with minimal flavor violation, and that's the standard model Higgs, and then an additional scalar, which is an octet of SE3, so it's colored and is a doublet of SE2. So from this motivation, then, we'd like to consider a model which has the scalar sector of the standard model Higgs and an addition of an octet scalar. And so we'll write down the most general eucalypt sector and scalar potential that we can. So the eucalypt sector looks like this, where there are two unknown proportionality constants, one for the uptight eucalypts and one for the down. And like the Higgs, the octet scalars couple more strongly to heavier particles. And these are your CKM matrix elements. It's interesting to note that there are no new parameters in the coupling of the octets to electroweak H bosons or gluons. The potential that you get is this mess, but the key point is what the mass spectrum looks like. So when the Higgs gets a BEV, the mass generacy in the octets is lifted. And we've here decomposed the neutral scalar in terms of two real SR and SI scalars. And in the SU2 custodial symmetric limit, the 14 additional real parameters in the potential reduced to 9. And the main point that will be relevant for us later on is that in this limit, the mass of the charged scalar becomes degenerate with the mass of MI. So there's been a fair amount of work that's been done on this model, and we'll refer to some of these studies as we go through. In particular, work by Gresham and Wise, where they look at vertex corrections of ZTD-VAR. There's been works on LHC discovery by Petro et al. Him and me have shown these octets can form bound states and all sorts of things. So what we looked at was how like can these octets be? And we started out by doing the fit to electric precision data. So the octets will contribute through loops to our oblique parameters. And we can write the contribution of the standard model plus the new physics contribution in this way. And the standard approach is to expand this new physics contribution, to Taylor expand it in Q squared. And effectively, then what you do is you ignore corrections which go like the mass of the Z squared over the mass of your new particle. However, if our new scalars are light, which they could be, this expansion may not be valid. And the approach we'll follow instead is to not expand, Taylor expand this new physics contribution, but just treat it as a perturbation. And in this treatment, then, you find that you actually need 6 parameters, in work that was done by Bridges et al. And so this is the approach that we'll follow. So the standard view, however, is that in order for these extra parameters to be needed, your new particles must be really very light. And if you add more parameters to your fit, in general, you expect it will be less constraining. So probably just looking at SDU is the more conservative thing to do anyway. But what we find is, in fact, that the additional parameters V and X do matter for masses in a few hundred GeV range. And furthermore, because of strong correlations between these parameters, the 6 parameter fit actually gives you a stronger constraint. And that's illustrated by this cartoon here, where when you have both parameters X and Y, your constraint space is given by this ellipse. When you marginalize over the parameter Y, you get a weak constraint just from X. This extended parameter fit had not been updated in some time, so that's what we did using values from PDG and from this paper by Erler et al. And so we carried out our fit, and we found these results, which are consistent with previous findings and give a good chi-squared over degrees of freedom fit. From this, you can get your correlation coefficient between all of these various parameters. And what you see from it is that there are strong correlations, so not just between S and T, but also between S and X, T and B, and U and X. And so these are important when we now try to constrain our light masses. So if we scan our parameter space for our model, so we have M plus, MR, and MI, I compare here the 3 parameter to the 6 parameter fit. And we scan over couplings lambdas from 0 to 1. And we compare the 68% confidence region for the 3 and 6 parameter fit. And what you see is that even for masses in a couple of hundred GeV range, the 6 parameter fit is, in fact, more constraining. Yes?
Is this for a particular value of the standard model Higgs mass?
Yes, so this is using the best fit value of the standard model Higgs mass of 96 GeV, just electric data. But we'll address what happens to the Higgs later. And then you also see that electric precision data selects for the approximately SU2 custodian symmetric case by requiring that these two are approximately degenerate there. And finally, you notice that, well, really light scalar masses are in fact allowed by electric precision data. So, below 100 GeV. So since the 6 parameter fit is more constraining, that's what we'll stick to from now on. So since these masses can be quite light, would they have been produced at LEP? So we can generate just a bound from a simple requirement of having made less than 10 events through just processes of E plus E minus producing pairs of colored scalars. And what you see is that it gives you a bound of about 100 GeV on the mass of the charge scalar. And and this bound in the MRMI plane. So our scalars can still be light. Here they can be less than 100 GeV and not have been bound by direct reduction at left. So as I mentioned, these constraints are generated using a mass of the Higgs around 96 GeV, but adding additional scalars would change the best fit mass from electric precision data. And so we carry out a joint fit to see what the effect is on the Higgs mass. So here we, again, scanning the couplings, lesson one, and we look at the 68 and 95% confidence regions for the mass of the Higgs versus the mass of scalar in GeV, and show direct production bound here, 68% and 95% confidence limits. And you see that when the mass of this colored scalar is in the couple of hundred GeV range, it allows the mass of the Higgs to increase, replacing its effect in oblique loops. Then as the scalar mass increases, the Higgs value returns to what it would be with just the Higgs alone, the standard model Higgs alone. So, well, what happens? So this parameter lambda, as I showed you before, it gives you mass splittings in your scalars, in your colored scalars. So if we allow them to vary over a larger range, we find something quite different. So it, in fact, notice the difference in scales here. So with lambdas less than 3, the Higgs mass can go up to 500 GeV here and TeV there. And what's happening is, in fact, that was mentioned before, which is that the octets give a positive contribution to the T parameter, which goes like the mass splitting in the scalars. And this can offset the contribution of the Higgs mass, which is negative here, allowing MH to increase substantially. And so you see here that by adding these octets, you can actually, they can actually allow the Higgs mass to increase dramatically. And in this way, TeV scaling physics masks the heavy Higgs in electric precision data. So that's all I'll say about the Higgs mass. And so let's move on to thinking about constraints that we could get from Tevatron. So how might you look for these light states? So previous studies have mainly focused on heavier scalar, colored scalars. So for lighter ones, again, the case will depend on mass splittings amongst the scalars, which in turn depend on parameters and the scale potential. So heavy octets can cascade decay to lighter ones by emitting gauge bosons. Obviously, they're also coupled to quarks, and as I mentioned, they couple more strongly to heavier states. So let's consider how you might look for them. The most model-independent way you might consider looking for them at Tevatron is through DiJet, a general DiJet search. And this is a result from a paper from CDF. The red squares here are the next leading order perturbative QCD results, and it generally seems to be a pretty good fit. So you can try to use this lack of deviation to bound new physics DiJet signals. But in general, the cross sections are too small to get an interesting constraint at Tevatron. So here's the production cross section for the scalars. And this gray band here, the 95 confidence limit obtained from the CDF paper, which is cross section times branching ratio times some acceptance fraction. And you see that your production cross section is many orders of magnitude below below this constraint. And constraints from Tevatron are generally weak since the octets couple to light quarks with smaller powers. So the same is true if you look for resonances in TT bar, which would be the dominant decay mode if the scalar mass is above twice the top mass. And so they're not ruled out from such searches at Tevatron. Well, what about when they're below twice the top mass? So perhaps you can get some constraint from decays to Bs. And there's a paper in which they looked at this, and they assumed the branching ratio of 1, And they used a CEF search, a SUSY search to 4Bs to get a bound of 200 GeV on the neutral scalar. But in fact, taking a closer look, you can evade this bound for much of the parameter space. So there's sort of the obvious thing where if the proportionality constant for the uptype Yukawas is bigger than 3 times that for the downtype, instead of preferentially decaying to Bs, they'll decay to charms instead. But it's also possible that, well, this branching ratio is much away from 1. And so how could that be? Well, what about decays to leptons? So as I mentioned, they can cascade decay. And as we saw from our fits to electroweak precision data measurements, small mass splittings are favored amongst the scalars. And so this would likely proceed through a virtual WZ. And so you can integrate out the W, and your mass splitting delta is much less than MW here. And you can get the following decay rate. And then we can just compare this to the decay to Bs or to charms to get an idea of what we might expect. And in fact, the light scalars can have significant branching ratio to leptons and jets, so which would be an interesting way to look at them, and has something that has not been done as yet. So if you consider a 200 GeV scalar, the decay to leptons will dominate over the decay to Bs for value of this proportionality constant less than 0.2, and similarly for charms for an ADE less than 0.6. And to give you a sense of what those numbers might mean, the constraint from vertex corrections of Z to BD bar require ADE less than 0.3. And for an ADE 0.3, BDS gamma tells you that ADE has to be less than 0.5. So for much of your allowed parameter space, you would have preferential decay to leptons and jets missing energy. So finally, I'll just mention the work from Kim and Meehan, where they showed that the octets can form bound states for a large range of parameter space. And this might be a good way to look for them. So in the decay to 2 photons, and the D0 did a search for resonances in the diphoton channel, and they set a bound on this production cross-section and branching ratio for the case. You can use this result to rule out masses for the scalars very effectively, but since the mass reach of the search was not that high, it only rules out masses less than 75 GeV, which we already know are not allowed from our direct production bounds and electric precision data results. So, but if these studies are extended, then they could be interesting and strong constraints for this model. So finally, I'd just like to conclude that colored octet scalars could be found at LHC and be consistent with current results from Tevatron, electric precision data, and flavor constraints. And that such scalars can remove the preference in the electric precision data for like Higgs. And that finally, signals such as leptons plus jets missing energy for these low mass new scalars could be an interesting thing to look at, as well as looking at decays to 2 photons. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge Brian's collaboration through large portion of this work. And that's it. Thank you.
So I guess what you're saying is that with the heavy Higgs around several hundred GeV and the light color octet scalars, you remain within the 68% confidence level STU VWX ellipse, right? That's the statement being made?
So 68 and 95%, okay. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, you stay inside the allowed ellipse for the global fit, but is there any one observable that you might screw up the level of 4 to 5 sigma if you do this? Basically, you make some certain list of observables agree very, very well, but then allow a very large deviation in one of them? If you looked at the separate ones.
No, we haven't looked at them separately. I mean, we looked at the general tension in electroweak precision data between leptonic and hadronic asymmetries, and which is in the fits to the standard model Higgs alone. And we found that the octet scalars just shift, depending on the mass splittings, shift both of these, both of those sets of observables to prefer heavier Higgs values. So it makes the ones that prefer a Higgs below the direct production bound to be above, but it doesn't bring them into closer agreement. And so there could be other effects not in the oblique corrections, so vertex corrections and other such things that may be relevant for those parameters, but it doesn't sort of solve that tension. So that's about as far as we go.
But we wouldn't have that big excursions because the way we did it anyway, because all it's appearing is these oblique corrections, and what's happening is that the two different particles are canceling in their contribution to the oblique thing, but the oblique thing is the same value as at the center model, so it'll be the same kind of excursion you have in the center model.
Okay, so basically, locally within a given observable, the two effects will cancel from the heavy Higgs in the scale. Okay.
So the thing to worry about is non obliques, right? But these guys, you cow couple.
Yeah, in principle, maybe BB bar.
Yeah, but they cow couple.
You calculate WW to WW longitudinal, B plus E minus WW longitudinal standard minimal Higgs mod. You get a very neat cancellation, which doesn't violate unitarity above a TeV. And now when you redo that calculation at the tree graph level, you've got many more Higgs exchange graphs. What happens? But you still have the same number of graphs from WWWW. I mean, the usual ones from the tree exchange and the T-child. So you have all these extra Higgs exchanges. I have to be put into the calculation.
But it'll be unitary, though.
Hmm?
It'll be unitary, though.
Why do you know?
Because it's gauging variables. Yeah.
Well, do you have a WW octet vertex?
Yeah, they couple to. I mean, they have, they're like the. They couple in the same way as the.
These guys don't have a that.
In pairs, only in pairs.
Yeah. So there's no single exchange.
They don't get a VEF, right? They have color. You don't want to
right.
Read it.
Did you look at all for the light scalars of possible deviations in top quark properties? For example, if it's light enough, the top quark could decay to one of these plus a bottom, and that might change some of the properties of decay. I don't know, the longitudinal or transverse fractions of what you would think was reconstructed as a W. It might just be possible to probe this in top quark decays at the temperature.
So we just looked at the resonance search for TT bar. It's the cleanest thing we could do, but in progress is heavy flavor decays.
So yeah, so that's something Mike's working on.
I'm thinking about the exotic single top reaction too, right? I saw something mentioned there. There are limits for W prime going to TB, and so I guess it would also show up. You could
look at just the scalars to TB.
Mm-hmm. But the Yukawa couple, if they're produced in Yukawa couple from the initial state, it's tiny. Right?
Yeah, that's the main problem with these, is that for light quark initial states, right? You have that small Yukawa for light quark initial states. So you could do that with, in conjunction with other jets, I suppose. But,
like TB.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's a neat.
Yeah.
But at tree level, you've got a W and a B, right?
The proton has to have W's and B's in it.
Yeah.
A single hop is made in the first place.
Right.
The 7 proton, so the 5 T's.
The single top production cross section is like avoiding 3 picobarns compared to 7. And the dominant diagram is essentially, again, tree level is B and a W and with a forward jet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, compared to the top at the tetratron, it's not that small.
Okay, well, we're looking right now at the total cross section for BB bar at least, because we thought that would be the cleanest thing to do first. But that's another thing to look at.
So you think that might give a significant constraint?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You should look at it though, because you can rule out a W prime to large masses. So maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's not something you look at.
Are there any other questions?
Just one more comment. I counted 12 parameters. What is that?
So, where is it? So the lambda free parameter can be made real by just the phase of the scalars, and then lambda 4 and lambda 5 are complex. And so I think with that counting, you should get to 14. So and then you have these additional relationships in the limit of custodial symmetry.
You have many more degrees of freedom. So you need 12 parameters.
He didn't want more, he wanted less.
Well, so the ones, so what's relevant for us is the masses of the scalars, in which the three parameters, lambda 1 through 3, are relevant. And then obviously the Yukawa couplings to the quarks, so which give you freedom in your model.
The way to think of these is as low-lying degrees of freedom of some new physics sector that's going to be at a high enough scale that it's going to be hard to directly probe at LHC. And then if it's an effective field theory, I mean, parameter counting isn't terribly relevant, I would say.
Yeah.
So you've got a positive contribution to delta T.
Yeah.
Does it depend on those parameters?
It depends on the mass splitting in the top. So
there could be negative or sometimes.
It doesn't always have to be positive.
The other question is, if you spectrometrize objects, then maybe you can simplify potential in some way. And how would you get?
Yeah, but then you.
How many parameters?
I refuse to do supersymmetry, first of all. but you know, you'd definitely have two Higgs doublets, and it would be, for anomaly cancellation, it would be a much more complicated spectrum. So we thought about it and decided not to do it for a reason. But yeah, in principle, you could.
Your super potential would be enormous for that, right? It wouldn't be very simple, I don't think.
It would not be easy, but it's in principle what he's saying is true. But
Occam's razor wouldn't be happy.
I think he'd be pretty happy. Because, I mean, you need an organizing principle for why flavor physics is such a problem. And it's a non-trivial thing that when you worry about flavor physics and you start to worry about minimal flavor violation as a symmetry principle.
That is constraining, right?
So, very constraining.
I mean, the constraining part is this where you...
There's just two. And these things are singlets under the flavor group.
And so it's sort of the most general thing you can do is you're including one and include the other.
All right, so let's thank Sal again.